It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the weekly edition of the Tuesday morning VolQuest podcast, presented by our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. Been local and trusted since 1999. If you need renovations, roofing, siding, windows, repair, whatever the case may be, contact Exterior Home Solution today. That phone number is 865-524-5888. You can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. I'm Eric Kane alongside Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, and Rob Lewis. A lot to discuss today. We'll look back at the win for Tennessee over NC State and the Duke's Mayo Classic. Look ahead to what you want to see from Tennessee this week against Kent State. And we'll take a trip around the SEC as well here over the course of the next 40, 45 minutes or so. Rob, so I've talked to both of these guys since the game's been over. I haven't really talked to you. Big thoughts coming out of that Duke's Mayo Classic. I mean, it was domination from start to beginning. Story of this football game was on the Tennessee defense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I don't have anything new to add. I mean, we've all written about it, talked about it. I mean, the defense, I mean, it's, you know, it was something that we talked about all summer. I mean, if you thought Tennessee was – you know, going to be an SEC contender and a college playoff contender. I mean, a big reason why was you thought that that front seven was going to be legit. And man, I mean, I'm not saying NC State is, you know, even maybe a top half of the SEC offense, but I mean, they're a quality football team. And Tennessee, I mean, just dominate. I mean, they can do anything. I mean, in the second half, I mean, the totality of the performance was impressive. The second half was just, I mean, we've not seen anything like that since Coach Heupel's been here. I mean, it was big time, high level SEC big boy football on the defensive side.
Yeah, that second half you're referencing for NC State, it goes fumble, turnover on downs, fumble, turnover on downs, punt, punt.
I think they ran 17 plays. Is that right? In the second, 17 or 19? I'm pretty
four,
sure.
5, 9, 12, 15. I got 15 plays here in the second half.
27 total yards of offense is what they gave up. And, you know, obviously it was a great performance by Tennessee's defense. I think that you're also coming to an understanding that NC State's not nearly as good as people thought they were going to be as well. And I'm not taking anything away from what Tim Banks has done, what they did and what that group did, but through two games now, NC State's given up 22 tackles for loss and 4 sacks. That's an offensive line not playing very good football for sure. But, I mean, Tennessee embarrassed them, Rob. I mean, they embarrassed them in the interior of that offensive line all night long.
It's interesting, too, because, like, you know, AP, going into the game, it was, at least over the offseason, you know, the conversation was a strength of that team's going to be the offensive line, and that offensive line is going to allow a new quarterback to get broken in, you know, some receivers tied in, some running backs as well. And again, we're not going to cover NC State the rest of the year, so I mean, we'll see the scoreboard, we'll see the scores and everything. But again, credit to Tennessee's defensive line. Maybe that unit will get better as the year goes along, but they didn't stand a chance on Saturday night. And really, obviously they had a poor week one against Carolina as well.
I mean, speak for yourself, Eric. I mean, the fact that Dorn does everything by Zoom, we could totally cover NC State the rest of the year.
That is true.
Yeah, like it's COVID still. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, again, winning up front is where, you know, you ultimately take a huge step as a program. And Tennessee's offensive line schematically does a fantastic job. What they've done defensively and building it has been really, really impressive. Rod needed to get, you know, a lot of those defensive linemen to kind of buy in to giving him one more year. Just has, you know, proven to be, you know, such a huge jump start to this season. And it means Nico and the offense doesn't have to be, you know, awesome every game. Again, if they do, then, I mean, watch out to whoever you're playing. But, I mean, gives them a little wiggle room. And that wiggle room means the world to a program that has had no wiggle room for the last – decade.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny, Rob. I was, or Eric, whoever, I was standing there at the complex on Monday as everybody was, you know, we were finishing up and guys were finishing up the interviews, and Bryson Eason went first, and he came walking out heading to go get his stuff to go to class or whatever. And I just looked at him and said, "Hey, man, are you tired?" And he's like, "Dude, not even remotely close. Like, not even really sore." I mean, 24 snaps, Rob.
I was going to bring that up. I mean, I thought that was one of the most, you know, illuminating things in your 10 things on Sunday was the snap counts for the defensive linemen. And I didn't even remember Bryson being that high. But, I mean, it was – I mean, what was he had to be close to the highest, didn't he, ever, 24?
Of the interior linemen, yeah. He and Omari Thomas both played 24. And then it was like Omar Norman Lott played like 14. And, I mean, you're talking about maximizing your snaps. I mean, he got his money's worth in 14 snaps. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody's getting winded or getting tired. I mean, he just smiled. And, I mean, Bryson just smiled and said, I'm not, you know, it was a pretty easy recovery day on Sunday, you know, because of the depth that they have there. Well, I mean, it's a luxury nobody else really has in college football, not in the defensive interior.
And you look at the second layer and the third layer behind that defensive line because they're so fresh and everything. And we go back and we can nitpick. And I mean, yeah, they had the, gosh, I guess it would, man, that might've been the one explosive play NC State had all. Yeah, it was the one explosive play NC State had all game. It kind of came off a little trickeration, right? To get the football into Concepcion's hands. You know, Tennessee's defensive backs did what they were supposed to do, but the linebackers, Austin, were flying everywhere. I thought Keenan Peely was just all over the field. I thought Arian Carter was all over the field. I thought Jalen Smith, you know, stepped up and had a chance to do what he does with Caleb Perry not in there. Again, we're seeing it now. We've been talking about it all offseason, but the talent, the depth, the freshness of that defensive line, it's only going to pay dividends for the second and the third layer of the defense. And I thought that was on full display the other night.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, they're just really good from it obviously starts with the D-line, but right back, even through the secondary, which is a little bit thinner, right, than it was when we started the season. But at the same time, I mean, you like that, you know, they're rotating so many players that Jalen Smith went to kind of in his redshirt freshman year, I guess maybe played special teams enough to be he's a sophomore, I don't forget.
He's redshirt.
You know, I mean, the kid just has bought in. He's getting his opportunity. He's maximizing. T. Lander gets an opportunity. He maximizes. Look at Idris Farouk. I mean, we were in the press box, and right before we went down.
Biggest hit of the game, maybe.
Yeah.
He laid the lumber that we could hear it through the glass in the press box. So, I mean, like, it's really infectious, I think, and it all starts with that D line, but it trickles back down into other areas where, like, everybody wants theirs, and it's not in a selfish way. Like, they want to, like, oh, you made a play? Now watch me make a play. And, you know, I think that, you know, that's just a healthy breed of, you know, competition across the board, even at different spots.
Something I like about this team, and we'll kind of move over to the offense side of the football here in a moment, but, you know, you saw it last week with Nathan Leacock, and you saw it Saturday with Deshaun Bishop. Hopefully you're not making a case for having to chase down interceptions, but, I mean, it's just those little plays, right? I mean, not giving up. Leacock saved the touchdown against UTC. Deshaun nearly caught up with Aiden White at the one and nearly saved a touchdown, or at least, you know, NC State were going to have to force it in. That just screams culture to me, Brent. I mean, you know, things are going well right now. Tennessee's faced no adversity, okay? But having those guys not give up on plays like that, having those guys saying, oh, you're making some plays, awesome. I want to go make a play. Now I'll do – I mean, that's what a winning locker room, that's what winning culture is all about. And, you know, Tennessee's feeling the love from Tennessee right now, and that's awesome. And I think it's just a credit to the leadership of this team and the attitude inside the locker room right now.
Well, I mean, listen, if you are one of these super seniors and one of these guys and you decided to come back – I mean, you didn't come back just to hang out and eat the food at the cafeteria. I mean, you came back to win, and you came.
Oh, that
back
is really good.
And I'm not knocking the cafeteria, but that's not why you came back. I mean, you know, I mean, part of it was all right. You got some NIL money, but I mean, you're committed to winning. I mean, you're wanting to come back and win, and think you have a chance to win. I mean, I think Omari Thomas is playing his best football right now. He still doesn't play low enough. He's never going to play low enough to make Rodney happy, and that's going to be a concern about with him at the next level. But, I mean, I think his effort, I think the way he's playing is at his best. I mean, you know, it wasn't a 30-yard run or a 40-yard run, you know, trying to tackle something after a turnover or whatever. But you look at the play he made when Boo Carter forced the guy back inside and missed the tackle in the flat. I mean, Omari Thomas is upfield trying to rush the quarterback, and he turns and runs and makes a tackle to prevent a first down from happening in a game that was over. I mean, at that point, it's 45-10 or whatever it was at that point in the game. but he's still playing with that kind of effort. Keenan Peely's block on Will Brooks, I mean, that's an effort play. So, yeah, I mean, I think everything about this team right now is exactly where you want it to be. Now, what does it look like when adversity hits? What does it look like as you go through the year and some guys' roles may transition a little bit? They're not playing as much as they want and all those types of things. You know, we'll see. But if you're playing 20 snaps a game and you're getting and you're producing and everybody's seeing your production, it's probably easier to accept that role of not playing 40 snaps a football game. But we'll see. I mean, it's a long grind and a long season. They're going to need all of them. And all of them were on display defensively on Saturday night. I think it's time Tim Banks gets some credit. I think he's getting some credit, some deserved credit. And I look forward to seeing how much more this defense grows moving forward, because he can do a lot in the back end with a defensive line doing what they're capable of doing.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's flip it over to offense. You know, Tennessee puts up a 50-burger. Of course, seven of those came off a pick six there from Will Brooks. But Tennessee had 460 yards of total offense. Tennessee ran the football for, what was it, about 230 yards. The run game was awesome. 169 all-purpose yards for Dylan Sampson, who was the true RB1. No Cam Seldon. Deshaun Bishop got some touches, but Dylan Sampson had a really, really good game. Didn't finish as much as you probably like if you're Josh Heupel in the red zone. They were 5 of 6 in the red zone, 4 touchdowns. Nico had 2 picks. We can talk about all that. But overall, Rob, it feels like there was a lot of more meat on that bone. It's not like the offense played horrible. I'm not saying that. Offense did some plays, and Nico balled out. He's SEC Freshman of the Week again here. But 2 turnovers, feels like it could have been even more dangerous. And, you know, offense probably has better days ahead, and that's a scary thought because you won by 41 points in a game like this.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt there's better days ahead for Nico. I mean, I just think, you know, if that's what growing pains look like.
Yeah.
I mean.
Sign me up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the one pick was that was a bad throw. I mean, he forced it in. I mean, I think there were about 4 NC State guys around, and, you know, easy pick for the safety. That's on Nico. The second one, I mean, maybe he should have eaten it, but that was a bang, bang. I mean, Spraggins got beat just immediately off the jump. And I get, you know, maybe Nico should, in hindsight, eaten that one, but he was just trying to make a throw and, you know, couldn't follow through because of the pressure. So I don't put the second one really on him. And I mean, I think you have to like what he did. And I tell you what, I didn't appreciate as much in the preseason. I think you saw it against NC State, is how much the defense, if they play like that, is going to be able to help Nico. Cause I mean, Josh didn't have to ask him to do much of anything. They ran it 44 times and threw it 23 times. And in the second half, I think he threw it 9 times, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, able to take so much pressure off of him and the run game, I mean, man, just lean on it. I mean, that AP, you were in there. That caught Dave Doran off guard. The way that Tennessee bludgeoned them in the run game caught NC State's head coach off guard.
Well, and again, Brent talked about just their ability to win in different ways. I mean, the fact that they've taken – a tight end room a year ago that was just kind of patchwork and made it a real strength this year with 3 quality bodies that have all caught touchdowns through 2 games, allowed them to go 12 personnel to give NC State a look that Tennessee hadn't given many people, you know, overall, much less for an entire game, and use it to their advantage, you know, where they were able to, you know, find those guys in the passing game for a couple of touchdowns with Stays and Kitzelman, and, you know, use it in the running game to the tune of, as Eric said, near 230 yards rushing.
Oh, and one thing I want to make sure I mention about Nico, because the one interception, and I'm sure you guys probably already talked about it, but after the early interception, he comes back and he just throws an absolute dime to Squirrel for you know, one of the biggest plays of the game, and that, you know, that's pretty strong for a kid in his third college start on the road.
Brent and I talked about this on the rewind. The 15-yard pass to Kitzelman out of that 12 personnel, he was the lineman on the hand in the dirt turf. And they did the play action, and the entire, you know, the back seven, you know, had to respect the run, and those linebackers were coming down hard, and then he's just wide open. But my favorite play of the game, it goes down as a no play, and I mean, they said Dane Davis is down the field. He was clearly not down the field, but it was scramble drill a little bit. Nico was so far behind the line of scrimmage, he sees Kitzelman running wide open down the middle of the field, quickly flips his hips, AP, and just slings that sucker down there, and Kitzelman makes that catch backpedaling. They wave it off, but I mean, I thought that was just a tremendous play, and I mean, just shows you what Nico can do in a scramble drill when plays break down. I thought that was super impressive. I wish it would have stayed and counted, obviously, and it should have. I thought that was a really, really good play.
It also shows why the coaches fell in love with Miles Kitzelman back in the spring, because he's versatile. And, you know, I mean, again, you mentioned that him making that play backpedaling, you know, it was a fantastic play. Again, it didn't count, but it does kind of give you a glimpse as to, you know, what they see in the tight end position. And then, you know, again, shows you the flash of Nico that, as we've all said, he's going to get better, and he wasn't going to play perfect. And if this is the low watermark for the year where he throws a couple of picks, then I think we're all in store for a pretty special fall.
Well, yeah, it's the thing that in watching him, and you heard about it, but in really watching him play is it's almost like the game around him is slow. Once the ball is snapped, I mean, they may catch him in a pre-snap read, and he may try to throw one in where he shouldn't have, which was certainly the case in the first interception. But you go back to his first couple of scrambles. He had a scramble where he hit where Kitzelman came off his block, and he hit him out there for a little bootleg, you know, for a 10-yard gain or something like that. I mean, a lot of the young quarterbacks there, I think, who have legs are just dropping their head and running. Right. Okay. I'm out of the pocket and I'm on the loose, man. It's really fast. And I'm just going to drop my head. I'm just going to take off running and see what I can get. And we'll go live and play the next play. He gets out of this pocket and it's like, it's almost like he's saying to himself, well, I know I can run here, but let's see if I can get something a little better. You know, let's see if I can, instead of getting 4 yards, let's see if I can find 15 in a pass route. Pat Ryan described it on the Vol Network broadcast as, Just some backyard ball. And I think he does have some backyard ball to him. And I think that's pretty fascinating to see with a kid who's at this age, that there's still that element to his game within the structure of what he's playing. We've all seen really good athletes, Rob, run around, right? But they're not poised. They're not really playing the quarterback position. They're just athletes who are just kind of running around trying to make a play. He's got the poise of a quarterback who can still run around and freelance some stuff, which I think is going to be fun to watch continue to develop throughout the year.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really small sample size, and I doubt I'm the first person to say it, but I mean, just the way he moves, over the way you're talking about, he glides, you know, kind of before he makes it. He reminds me of Bryce Young a lot, except, you know, he's, you know, except Nico's a grown man, you know, and I'm not trying to, you know, make fun of young size, but really just the way he moves. I mean, so smooth, eyes downfield, and you know, maybe, you know, that won't bear out. Maybe that's just, you know, having seen Nico for three games, but I think there's a lot of that in him.
Anything else from this NC State game that you want to touch on?
I got one that I want to talk about, and I want Hubbard's input on it. I wrote about it, and this is a Josh Heupel tip of the cap. They were 7 of 14 on third down, but four of those, man, were just absolute killers. Like third and seven or longer, that led to points. You know, Nico's the third and seven, the quarterback draw, the two shovel passes, which were
third
just,
and 15 on one of them, Rob.
The third and 12 on the other shovel pass. I mean, those were, I mean, when you convert, you know, third and 12 with a shovel pass and then score a touchdown two plays later. I mean, that's demoralizing. Tennessee did that to him four different times on third, you know, where you're, I mean, I'm sure 70, you think you're getting off the field 75%, 80% of the time. And Tennessee converted and, you know, and three of those led immediately to points. And I thought those were, I thought Heupel deserved a tip of the cap because two of those, one was Nico quarterback keep on, and that was a fourth and three. You know, he wasn't even touched on the draw. And the two shovel passes are just, you know, I got to think if you're the opposing coach, you're just like, ah, you know, when they catch you on that.
And I think Brennan will agree with what I'm about to say. I think we're giving Heupel a tip of the cap. I think you have to give Joey Halsley a tip of the
okay,
cap.
Okay, AP, that's very fair. That's very fair.
I mean, Halsley's the one that's calling plays.
Well, I mean, listen, you're right. And I thought Tennessee on both sides of the ball completely outcoached North Carolina State. And I'm not taking a jab at Dave Doran. I thought that Tennessee was vastly superior athletically on the field. They were more physical. All of those things were in their favor. But I think you throw in the fact Tennessee out-schemed them. They outcoached NC State. I thought it was interesting. Josh Heupel had gone against Tony Gibson one time previously, and that was when Heupel was the OC at Missouri and Gibson was the DC at West Virginia, and Heupel only scored 11 points, and they struggled in the red zone. Do we think for a minute that had anything that led to the fist pump we saw after the touchdown pass to the tight end? Because we know Josh Heupel's never forgotten anything. But I thought that they clearly out-schemed him. And I think that it's all parties involved. I think it's the staff goes into that, and it's Halsley. And I give Alec Ablin credit. I mean, Holden Stage talked this week about it when he met with the media on Monday. They put a bunch of new stuff in last week. I mean, it was the base of that stuff was in, but they really dialed up some stuff with that two tight end set. And Tennessee they outmaneuvered them. I mean, they had a great game plan and outcoached NC State. I don't think NC State's nearly as good as I thought they were going to be. I think they've got some issues. We'll see what their season looks like. But I thought Tennessee coached circles around them on Saturday.
And I think you should be excited that you have not only that, a ton of that on tape that, you know, just gives something else for Oklahoma and everybody to prepare for, but you've got that in your back pocket to where when you're in the red zone, you need to punch it in. You can go that 12 personnel. They've done it literally four or five times in 3 years. They did it at Kentucky one time. They've done it at home one time, I think against Alabama. But they've done it like four or five times in 3 years. They did it like 30 times, if at least 30 plays in that football game on Saturday. So you have that in your back pocket to where if a front seven's getting after your quarterback and your offensive line needs help, you can have a seven-man protection back there to help you. And, you know, third and short, fourth and short, whatever the case is, I just think that's something moving forward. It's not going to be your everyday base personnel, but you should have some confidence with that 12 personnel running forward, and that's something you haven't really had a lot in years past.
Well, I think when you look at this offense, this has a chance and should be the most versatile offense Josh Heupel's had at Tennessee. He can look. I'm not saying he's going out and reinventing his playbook, but I think he's going to be able to get to more pages in his playbook than he's been able to get to in his first 3 years at Tennessee because, Austin, they have depth, they have skill, they have talent at all the spots, you know, tight end, running back, receiver, that they have not had consistently during their time here.
They're deep at every position on the offensive line except for quarterback. I mean, you know, that's you know, the facts. I mean, you could say maybe tackle, they're not super deep on the offensive line. But, you know, they just have so many weapons at running back. Cam Seldon's out. No big deal. We're not shake it off, right? They're super deep at tight end. You know, love where they're at a receiver. And you're right. It just gives them versatility. I mean, you said this, you know, coming home from Charlotte. Like, Saturday was a reminder that they can meet you in a lot of different ways. And, you know, it can be death by paper cut. It can also be death by just, you know, nuclear bomb. So, I mean, like, it's pick your poison. And, again, if Saturday is one of their worst performances of the year, then everybody else needs to be super worried. Because I don't think, as I said on The Nation Sunday night, what do we love to say about Rick Barnes is defense travels. Something about this defense with Tim Banks is going to tell me it's going to travel. Every game it's going to be like this because that defensive line and so on and so forth.
Yeah, speaking of that depth, I mean, when we looked out there pregame and, you know, got the binoculars seeing who all is there and you can't find 23, it's like, okay, well, where's Cam Seldon? And then we, you know, talk and everything. And then it was announced he was going to be inactive. I mean, maybe I'm too high on Bishop right now. And this is not a slight at Cam Seldon at all, because I think he's going to be a really good player. But it's like, oh, Cam Seldon's up. That's fine. Tennessee will be okay. That was my thought. I mean, did anybody have concern there? Like, it's just an example of like, oh, you got a receiver that goes down? You'll be all right. Running back that goes down, as long as it's not Sampson, you'll be all right. Defensive lineman goes down. Well, you got 13 more that you play. It's a good position to be in if you're Tennessee, for sure.
Well, and I think this too, Rob. I mean, I think we've seen it over the course of the time that he's been here. The nameplates can change in the run game, But with what they do schematically and the way that they create the numbers advantages, you can see success from a lot of different tailbacks. You know, it doesn't have to be the one bell cow guy. Now, Sampson's clearly their best guy, but you can find success running the football with a variety of tailbacks because of what they do schematically.
I totally believe that. I mean, I guess the way I would say it is, I think I've seen enough of them. They can move the chains with an average SEC back, but if he's got somebody like, you know, Sampson or Wright with a burst, and I mean, he's going to create some seams where you can get some home runs. But they can move the ball, and he can create seams. I mean, even, you know, they've not gashed Georgia or anything, but as good as Georgia has been, I mean, Tennessee still, you know, moved the ball against them.
Yep. Talking about that run game, they like to move around those linemen, like to pull some guys. You know, one will pull, kick out, whether it's a tackle or an H or whoever will come back, wrap around and lead, fold around and lead. It's a pretty sight to behold. Also, as we transition over to what we want to see on Saturday, you guys were giving praise to Tennessee's third down offense. The team that's about to come into Neyland Stadium on the year in two games, 5 for 30 at a whopping 16% on third down.
Sounds like my ability to hit fairways.
So one team's pretty good at it. One team's not really good at anything. And on that note, we'll get into what we want to see against Kent State on Saturday. Before we get there, though, you only get 12 chances in the regular season to see Tennessee football play, so take advantage of it, right? That's kind of what Josh Hopple was talking about in terms of staying motivated this week and trying to get better. And if you want to go to Neyland Stadium this year and watch Tennessee, if you want to go to Neyland Stadium this Saturday and watch Tennessee, go buy your ticket on the Game Time app. The Game Time app, you can buy tickets to events in your area, sporting events, football games at Neyland Stadium, baseball games at Lindsey Nelson, basketball at the Food City Center. They also have on this app something called the Game Picks, where it filters out the fluff to show you only incredible deals on great seats so you don't have to waste any time searching through thousands of different tickets. They got the game price, the best price guarantee, where they're going to credit you 110% of the value if you find a cheaper ticket in the same section on another site. Plus, you get views of your seat, all-in pricing, the best ticketing, the most flexible customer service policy in the ticketing industry is all on the Game Time app, and of course, over at GameTime.co online as well. Not just sporting tickets as well. You can get tickets to concerts in your area, to monster truck rallies over the Food City Center, comedy shows, whatever the case may be. Tennessee Smokies tickets you can buy on the Game Time app. So go ahead and download that Game Time app today. Create an account. Put in the promo code ON3, and you're going to get $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Create an account. Put in the redeem code ON3 for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute ticket, lowest price guarantee. And as always, want to give a shout out and a big thank you to our presenting sponsor of the VolQuest podcast. That is our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Get Neyland loud this football season with Exterior Home Solutions, East Tennessee's first choice for exterior renovations.
As always, want to thank our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being the sponsors here of this podcast. That is 865-524-5888, that phone number for a free consultation, or you can visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. All right, so Tennessee took down NC State. Tennessee took down UTC, back to Neyland Stadium this Saturday, 2-0 record. And you're about to open the doors to, statistically, if you are a FPI follower over at ESPN.com, the worst FBS football program in America, ranking at number 134 out of 134 teams. Kent State with an 0-2 record, coming off a loss to FCS St. Francis at home last week, is coming to Neyland Stadium. I never like to devalue your opponent before you play them, but this is going to get so ugly. But it's an opportunity for a lot of these young guys, Austin Price, to get in, get theirs, and have a field day.
Yeah, on the record, several days. I think Mike Matthews, that's his actual coming out party because he's not played at this point this weekend. I think he'll be healthy enough to play based off people I've spoken with, and I expect him to be a factor. But you're right. I think that you still want to get a few of these older guys a little bit of run, get them in, get them out, get them over there with their feet up, all those type of things, to the point where when Brent Hubbs asked Bryson Easton or whoever on Monday, how you feeling? I didn't feel like I played Saturday. You know, I mean, I think that that's that's an important part of this game, is getting them in and getting them out, but also keeping them a little bit crisp. But this is a game for all those young guys. This is a game for, you know, the Idris Farooqs and the Edwin Spillmans, who's, you know, trying to get healthy off that quad
pull. Peyton Lewis,
you know, Nathan Laycock, Braylon Staley, those players, you want to see them, you know, keep doing their thing. And you also want, you know, see some of those other guys that have played just a little bit, you know, be able to, you know, continue to build off what they've been doing early in the year in actual real rotation.
Well, I mean, listen, last week was a trap game for Kent State. Let's just be real honest with each other, right? I mean, it was a trap game. So that's what happened in that deal. No, I mean, there is bad of a team from a talent standpoint coming to Neyland Stadium that we've seen come into this stadium. I mean, they are. They're just – They
look pretty good in all these pictures, though.
Yeah, they do look good in the pictures.
I mean, they're probably worse than Chattanooga, would you not say, Hubbard?
Yeah, I mean, I think
– Oh, 100%, Rob. Yeah,
what we've seen to this point, I think that's absolutely the case, which gets me to this question. And I think this is where – this is the challenge for Josh Heupel and his coaching staff this week in terms of decision-making, right? I mean, how beat up – we saw three offensive linemen – limping and, you know, writhing in some pain. I mean, Cooper Mays was hurting coming off the sideline, coming to the sideline at one point. Lance Hurd had to walk around to try to get a little pain out of his knee. And we saw Spragans limping around. Like, how do you manage those guys this week? How do you deal with that? Because you want to keep guys fresh. You got to protect your quarterback. What all does that look like? This is, I think, a hard week for this coaching staff. Because how do you motivate your team, and then how do you figure out how to manage it, Rob? Like, you don't – I mean, this is not like you set down all your starters and we're not going to play those guys. But how do you – you know, how do you deal with this week? I think it's going to be really interesting to watch.
I mean, I don't know if Josh Heupel would go this way. And, Hubbard, I don't know if you agree with it. But, I mean, if anybody is not like 100%, like all full go, everything is clicking, I'm not playing them. Not with Oklahoma coming, because – if you win that game at Oklahoma, I mean, what are your chances for making the playoff?
Well, that's going up.
I mean, there's going up.
Significant.
I'm almost pushing all my chips to the middle of the table. And not playing Lance Hurd or Andre Carrick or whoever against Kent State is, you know, the end all be all. But I'm erring on the side of caution just because of what's at stake if you win the Oklahoma game, what's in front of you. I mean, I think it's hard to overstate.
I think the hard part is you need Nico to play.
Now, that I agree with 100%.
But you're not – do you really risk him out there? I mean, like, they put Larry Johnson out there blocking for him against Chattanooga, and next thing you know, defensive lineman's diving at his knees at the back end of that one play. It's what comes first, chicken or the egg. Like,
I mean, it's a balancing act.
It's rest, but you want him to stay healthy, but you also want to get those guys rest. Like, you know, how do you balance it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it's a hard week. I mean, I think it's a hard week because, you know, how do you motivate your team? And listen, I understand you can throw Northern Illinois out there, which is what Josh Heupel essentially did in his press conference on Monday when I asked him the question. He didn't mention Northern Illinois by name, but he noted, you know, what that anything can happen in college football, and that's certainly the case. I think Northern Illinois was a 4-touchdown underdog. This one's going to be a 7-touchdown underdog team, or it's going to go off the board, I think, when you look at it. What's the line, 48.5 or something like 40, that?
It is. This morning it was 47.5 with the total at 62.5.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just hard. I mean, it's a harder sell to your kids. You know, Nico talked about after the Chattanooga game, keeping your foot on their throat a little bit. And it's just, I think this is a challenging game because why would your thoughts not be on Oklahoma right now?
Yeah.
I mean, you could say all that you want to, right? I mean, it's and all those types of things, but how are you not putting your thoughts on the Oklahoma game on Tuesday of Kent State week?
It's easy to say you keep your foot on the throat, Eric, until you get out there and you realize you're shooting Bambi's mom.
Yeah. I mean, I talked about culture a moment ago, right? And that's why I think the leadership in that locker room and on that, and there's nothing that says that it won't be this way. I'm just saying, but like the Brew McCoys, the Amari Thomases, the Andre Turrentines. I mean, they need to say, hey, treat this week at practice, treat this game on Saturday like it's any other game. In the back of your mind, you know it's not just any other game, but you need that type of leadership. And I think Tennessee will get that.
I think they'll come out and have a little something to them, be ready to play. I think the question, though, is from the standpoint of just in – I mean, how do you manage it? How many snaps are you going to give somebody?
Yeah.
You know, and kind of where is that process at when you look at what's coming down the pike on the schedule?
Well, somebody said it earlier, like Cam Seldon, I wouldn't play him a snap against this game. I would let DeShaun Bishop run for over 100 yards. I'd let Peyton Lewis run for 100 yards. I wouldn't play Cam Seldon the snap. If it was me calling the plays, I'd couple series, score touchdowns, get him out. This team's not going to come back and beat you, so I don't know. I mean, I'm intrigued to see what it looks like. We can all agree on this, right? There's certainly some things that would give us kind of pause if Tennessee does poorly in a game like this going into Oklahoma, but there's nothing that Tennessee could show us in this game that gives us any more confidence in what the Vols can do against Oklahoma, right? I mean, the opponent is just not anywhere in the same stratosphere.
I mean, AP said it best, shooting Bambi's mom. That was a pretty good one. And plus, I mean, it's not a bad thing to play all those guys, the younger guys a ton with the SEC grind coming up. The gauntlet, you're going to go through it, and you're not going to have a chance. You don't play Kentucky until November 2nd. That's going to be the next time you have a chance to empty the bench and play some of these freshmen.
I mean, it is. I mean, it is one of the last times as you enter the gauntlet that you can, you got the 4-game rule. But this is a chance for some guys to go. I mean, I'd like to see Farouk a little bit more, wouldn't you guys? I mean, I'd like to see what that looks like. I think John Slaughter. I mean, there are some places on this field that those guys need as much work as you can get. Like you need John Slaughter to come on at safety. Are Farouk, because you're not deep enough there. The interesting balance is, what do you do up front on offense? For me, I think that's the interesting balance. Because
I think that's the question.
I think that's the question. Because you want Nico to get work. But to do that, you got to make sure you're protecting Nico. You don't want to put Nico out there, with a bunch of young guys and put some high risk there. But how much wear and tear do you want to put on your starters if any of them are banged up coming out of the NC State game? And maybe they're all healthy. They all finished the game. I mean, no, it wasn't like nobody didn't finish. But, I mean, John Campbell was in and out of the lineup the whole game. Spragans limped around pretty good. Cooper seemed fine, but he was hurting pretty good coming off after a drive. We saw Hurd back. I mean, what I'm saying? I think that is – I'm curious to see how they manage on Saturday.
Well, I think there's a difference in going straight twos and then having, which we're seeing this already, especially at tackle, as you just mentioned. I mean, Dane Davis and Jackson Lampley will play a ton, in my opinion, with the first team offense, because John Campbell's going to have they're going to have to, manage him all year long. Spragans, I thought he was going to come out of the game at one point, Tom, and then they called a timeout and then he's jumping around, back on the field. So I bet Lampley and Dane Davis will play a whole lot. I don't know if William Satterwhite would get in there with the ones at center, but yeah, I'm like you. I'm intrigued to see what it'll look like. But
and we don't think Rodney's going to give anybody a break on Saturday, right? I mean, none of those guys got a day off in the scrimmage setting in the preseason.
Gave Pierce 10 snaps against UTC, though.
That's true. They did. So. And he'll manage. I mean, none of those guys are playing heavy snaps. They got so many of them. But this is, get Jordan Ross a bunch of work, right, AP? Yeah. I mean, let's see what that looks like. Let's get him some more things out there. I think Caleb Herring needs a bunch of run to kind of continue to build him and get him going as well. So this is the opportunity, and you better take full advantage of it because you don't have another one of these coming down the pike in the immediate horizon.
Had the first glance up on the website last night. Go check it out if you're interested in seeing Golden Flash. There we go. Go check it out. But also, it's time to look at. They're just a really bad football team. The SEC last week. I thought we were all watching it at different locations there in the Charlotte area, but I thought Oklahoma State and Arkansas, really, really good game. Although neither team wanted to win that football game. Arkansas, there's no adult on the sideline. I mean, if it wasn't an incomplete pass, that game runs out at the end of the fourth quarter. I don't know what they're doing right there, but that had a wild finish. I mean, Texas, Michigan's about what we expected. I think the most exciting game, obviously, last week in the SEC was Arkansas and Oklahoma. They looked good early on, but couldn't finish, AP.
No, they couldn't finish. And Danico Slaughter had multiple pass interference plays. Addison Nichols got blew up right there at the end when Arkansas was trying to go for it on fourth and one. And then you flip it to the Auburn-Cal game, Rob. Turnovers, turnovers, turnovers. You get a pick, and you get a pick, and you get a pick. When is Hugh Freeze going to figure out, I've got to go get a quarterback?
Hey, AP's been, he's had this one in his back pocket since Saturday night in the press box. Go ahead, AP. Finish your thought.
Troll with Peyton Thorne.
I just think he's an average quarterback.
I think he sucks.
Yeah. And I just think Deuce Knight is going to them going, show me more money, give me more money, and I'll flip. I mean, he holds all the leverage in that deal right there. And I think Auburn's about to pony up.
Well, after Saturday, you'd think so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they just offensively, they just weren't very good. And I mean, Justin Wilcox and Peter Sermon are the best defensive duo, one of the best defensive duos in college football. They're just at a place that nobody pays any attention to.
They should be 2-0 against Auburn the last 2 years, right?
If he had made a kick, they'd have won that game last year. That's exactly right.
What did Thorne throw four picks?
He threw at least four.
I think he threw four. I think he finished with four. He threw two in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's just one of those deals where, you know, Auburn's still trying to find an answer offensively. I mean, here's my take from the league, and this is kind of big picture from the league. We said going in to the year, we talked about it, and I thought there was clearly five, maybe six teams, and then there was kind of the rest. I think after a couple of weeks of the football season, Georgia's good. Texas is good. Okay. I still think when Milroe's playing well, Alabama's good. Now, if he goes off the rails, that thing gets dicey, but they're still good. Okay. Ole Miss is good. Tennessee is good.
Missouri,
particularly with their schedule, is good. And then after that, what is everybody, right? I mean,
LSU still can't play defense with a top 10 pick at linebacker.
Well, they can't run the ball. I mean, with the injury to Emory, they're going to struggle to run the ball. Kentucky's offensive line is absolutely a mess at this point. I do think South Carolina's defensive front's pretty salty and pretty good. The freshman edge guy, the five-star freshman edge, is legit. He has a big-time player. But they couldn't protect. I don't think South Carolina is great offensively. We'll see how far Norris develops as they move forward here.
How about that bounce back? I mean, he's no friend of the GQ, but, I mean, that's pretty good bounce back. That game was on the road for them, right? I mean –
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just telling you right now. I mean, if that Kentucky offensive line doesn't get any better, man, it's going to be a brutal year up there. Because I mean, I know he only threw for 30 yards or whatever, and I'm sure he missed some plays. But Brock Vandergriff was running for his life from the first snap on in that football game. That offensive line at Kentucky has to improve dramatically, really, really fast. Really fast. By the way, hats off to Alex Golish. I know that game ended up 42-16, but 2 years in a row, he's put some fear into Alabama. There'll be some Power 5 ADs yes, taking note of Alex Golish and what he's done with a limited roster, with a defense that's not really – where they're just trying to outscore everybody. There'll be some people take note of what Alex Golish has done in those two games and what he's done in a year plus at South Florida. That's an impressive performance by him, Rob.
Bama scored 28 in the fourth, right?
Yeah.
16-14. I mean, that was big time.
14-13 with 10 minutes left.
I mean, it got away from them because they ran out of gas, yeah. You know, and Bama hits a couple big plays there. But, we'll see what happens at Florida. You know, does Lane get involved there if Billy Napier's gone? You know, I think Alex Golish's name's got a chance to show up for some Power Five jobs in this offseason. I really do. Because I think that he's done a nice job there, and he's going to interview well with whoever he interviews with. It would not surprise me at all to see his name pop up with a big time job, including a potential SEC job if it came open.
Oklahoma looked very uninspired. 2 points, 2 points in the second half, and those 2 points came with less than 2 minutes left on a safety. I mean, goodness gracious. They only have one turnover in the football game, but 16-12 against a Houston team that is not good. You know, teams can improve, obviously, and Oklahoma is a lot more talented than that, but that was not a good showing on Saturday.
Well, I think the other thing that you realize around the country is when you watch games, it's just and Josh Heupel talked about this on Monday in his press conference when he was talking about the celebration stuff that, Austin, you asked him that question about. It's hard. It's hard to win. It's hard to be at your best. I mean, look at Notre Dame, right? Notre Dame goes into Texas A&M, physically matches up, finds a way to win that game, and we've all got them on a, you know, on the red carpet to the playoff, and it's easy. And then Marcus Freeman couldn't get his team ready to play the next week.
Yeah.
It's just, it's hard. You better show up every week. And if you don't, you're going to get embarrassed. You're going to lose something that you shouldn't lose, or you're going to really struggle and create a lot of doubt. I think that's what Oklahoma did. I think Oklahoma fans are like, wait a minute, what do we have here? Because of what happened. Now they got to turn around and play Tulane. We'll see what that looks like. But it's hard to show up and be at your best every week in this sport. It's harder than it's ever been because you just don't have enough games where you roll out the ball and say, hey, I'm just going to be better than you.
Yeah. And we were busy, so I didn't watch Oklahoma in detail, but just, you know, watching some of the highlights, look at the box score, man, the offensive line is, I mean, that was something that was a question mark, I think, for all of us that had looked at them in the preseason, and they struggled big time.
Yeah,
75 yards rushing at Houston. Arnold was sacked 3 times, and I think under a lot of pressure. So that's going to be – I mean, that's a matchup that, you know, we talked about in the preseason, Tennessee's defensive front against that offensive line. And that 2 weeks in, that still looks like one to watch.
And you go look at – and I know one player doesn't make the offensive line, but had, you know, Oklahoma won the battle for Lance Hurd over Tennessee, you know – I'm not saying it totally flips because I don't think that's accurate either. But, like, how much better do they feel about, you know, maybe their offensive line? How much more worry is there to Tennessee? So, you know, little recruiting wins that are NIL related and maybe not NIL related can make the difference between, you know, having a really good chance in 2 weeks and then not.
Well, and I think that's the story that you're looking around when you look at these teams. It's about roster management. And you got to give Tennessee credit for what they have done with their roster management. Out of all the guys who left, are they really feeling the pinch of anybody who left this past year when you look at who they've replaced them with? Now, we're 2 games in. We'll see. But, I mean, I think Jermon McCoy is a great pickup in the portal. We've talked about Lance Hurd. I think Chris Brazel, the tight ends, obviously. I mean, Tennessee has done a good job in the portal, but we know the portal's not an exact science. I mean, NC State's not getting out of Grayson McCall what they thought they were getting in a quarterback transfer. Obviously, the transfers at Florida State have not gone and given the Seminoles what they thought they were going to get. You know what I mean? And so that's
why you can't live there.
That's right. But you've got to hit on some of them. Some of the ones you get, I mean, you're going to get guys for a reason. They've got to be able to play. And it looks like through 2 games, Tennessee's gotten a group of guys who can play. They've done a good job with their portal evaluation stuff. I mean, like, why didn't Auburn go get something in the portal at quarterback? Right? I mean Kentucky thought they went and got them a quarterback.
So did Florida State. I mean,
right.
NC State. I mean, it's
Syracuse it's, got one, right? Kyle McCord looks like he can play for Syracuse.
And Miami got one. I mean, it's stating the obvious, but man, you talk about the biggest feast or famine hit or miss thing is it's the quarterback in the transfer portal, because it's a 1 year, you know, you've got Hendon Hooker and you catch lightning in a bottle, or you got, you know, DJ at Florida State looking at, you know, I can't believe we got 10 more games of this.
A lot going on over at VolQuest.com as Tennessee prepares for Kent State. The Volunteers are 2-0, going to be 3-0 after this next week, getting ready for Oklahoma. But those players inside the locker room got to play Kent State and focus on the Golden Flashes first. I'm Eric Kane with Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, and Rob Lewis. Big thanks, as always, to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions, roofing, siding, windows, garage doors. Contact Exterior Home Solutions today if you have a need. They've been local. They've been trusted since 1999. That phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. For Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, I am Mary Kane. Appreciate you guys as always. We'll be back on Thursday for the mailbag edition of the show right here at VolQuest.com. You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.